Dr. Bethia Walsh, one of the things that you're making so clear to us is that there are so many aspects of life that pertain to addiction. And one of those aspects that you were sharing with me is the one that we're going to go into now, and that has to do with addictions and culture.
Mm-hmm.
So how does that come? How does culture come into play?
Well, at least in my practice, I see a relationship between substance, the stress of being a cultural being or being bicultural or being, you know, related to like acculturation stress. So, yeah, bicultural sort of shifting back and forth, code switching, for example. So it's the folks who, you know, show up at the seat, at the table, in the boardroom, and who communicate in one way, and then when hanging out with their friends after work, communicate in a different kind of way. So having to make those shifts back and forth. And so to manage stress related to that, to manage stress related to how culture shows up in other ways in their life. So I've seen quite a few people, women, black women in my practice, who often talk about stress related to being that person in their office that everybody goes to, and almost like a mammy role, like everyone expecting that one person to take care of them, to just, you know, run the whole system for everybody. And that certainly takes a toll. And also substance use I've seen in my practice has functioned in a way for people to manage stress related to just the day-to-day traumas, microaggressions. So again, that being followed around in a store or getting on an elevator and people shift to the other side or whatever that is. Because even though on the outside, people might say, well, those are isolated incidents, but they certainly are not isolated incidents. And that's the stressful part of microaggressions, because we never know when and how they're going to happen. They just come out of nowhere. They're often unexpected. That's stressful in itself. So there's cumulative effects of the impact of culture on people. And, you know, when what's happening in the environment outweighs how people are coping, well, there you have it. People are stressed. People feel overwhelmed. And along with some, you know, other risk factors or environmental factors, people may turn to substance use to escape, let go, disconnect, numb themselves to very stressful and painful feelings that come up for them.
It's so interesting because you mentioned, for example, the people who might shift to the other side of the elevator. And that could seem like such an innocuous.
Sure.
But. It speaks to how what kind of value they do or do not place on the people that they're shifting from. And though they may not say a word, the people who are being shunned like that are picking up on that unspoken message.
Yeah. And then there's the people in the situation who are just watching it all go down. And that can be stressful, too, if they say nothing. You know, they don't advocate for the person it's happening to, that can be stressful as well. So, yes, it can seem very innocuous. And, you know, well, I didn't mean to, and there was no intention there. And even if that's true, it doesn't mean it's not harmful, if that makes any sense.
That does.
And not stressful for people.
Wow. And so, as a result, some people are going to, as you mentioned, to kind of numb, to help themselves cope with the stress of how they were treated, mistreated, they might turn to drugs. Do we find that regardless of why a person may have started on drugs, the drugs just tend to have the same basic effect on the brain, no matter who it is and no matter why they're using?
For the most part, the effects are the same. And I think where we see the most variability is the function that the drug serves for the person.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I see is people, so one person might say, well, I smoke weed to relax or to calm down. Another person might say, well, I smoke weed to calm my mind because maybe they're anxious. Maybe they have a hard time stopping their worry. For some people, I'm trying to manage a mood thing. So, you know, when I feel depressed, I feel like I need to, you know, use cocaine, or when I feel lonely, I need to drink. So the function of the substance often varies widely for people, although there's usually themes. And then people in 12-step might say hungry, what is it, halt, hungry, angry, lonely, tired. But there's often sort of cross-cutting triggers for that varies the most.
Interesting. So I guess maybe another time we will be able to get into some ways of overcoming addiction. But in a few seconds, could you share with us just a word of encouragement, whether it be for people who are addicted and or their loved ones who are being stressed by the addiction of the person they love?
Yes, I would say stay hopeful, treatment works. And people don't often think about going to treatment, but it has certainly been shown to be very, very helpful for people and their loved ones who are supporting someone and being sober, making some changes. So I'd say give it a try.
That is awesome. Ladies and gentlemen, please keep that in mind. Dr. Angela Bethea Walsh, you've shared just a wealth of insights with us today. It has been not only enlightening, but really encouraging, especially that note at the end. I want to thank you again so much for having joined us.
Thank you for having me. I've been looking forward to it for a long time. Really a pleasure of mine. So thanks for having me.
My pleasure. All right, everyone. Remember, treatment really works. Look into it. That may be one great way for you to let some of life's best moments come through you. Till next time.